Welcome to A State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat with business leaders to discuss what it takes for a company to be in a state of readiness and become a high-performance organization with your host, Joseph Paris. Welcome, everybody. This is Joseph Paris, and you're listening to another episode of State of Readiness, a podcast set as a fireside chat with industry leaders. And today we have Dale Bailey. And Dale is the lean director of the filtration group of Parker Hannifin. He started with the company as a production assembler 41 years ago in 1978. Having a career in one company that spans 41 years is virtually unheard of in this day and age. He also is the founder of Aspire Coaching and Consulting. We'll get into that in a little bit, what that's all about and the fancy little catch word that Dale uses for it. And he's held various leadership roles and found his niche as a champion of continuous improvement initiatives since 1993. Dale earned a Six Sigma Black Belt certification with ASQ in 2007. He's also accomplished multiple model plant certifications globally in California and Brazil and South Korea and UK and places beyond, including winning the AMME, that's American Manufacturing Enterprise. Or what is it, Dale? The AME.
Yeah, Association for Manufacturing Excellence.
Excellence, right. It was the American Manufacturing Excellence Organization at one time for operational excellence in 2010. As lean director, Dale leads a leadership development program, runs monthly global operational reviews for 45 operations, and conducts rapid improvement Kaizen events at targeted sites. Dale also joined the John Maxwell team as an independent certified coach, trainer, and speaker, and set up Aspire Coaching and Consulting. He is ambitious at the service of others and clarified his personal mission as helping others to live abundantly and continuously improve. Welcome, Dale. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Joe.
My pleasure. I'm happy we were able to work out the connectivity issues. I mean, it's been a bit of a challenge today, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, but, you know, perseverance.
Endeavor to persevere, absolutely. So, you know, there's a couple of things that struck me in your bio. And, you know, you and I have been connected on LinkedIn for some time. Mm-hmm. I believe this might be the first time we've actually spoken. Is that true?
We spoke a couple months ago, just on an introductory call. We had had a great call together and should have recorded that one, too.
Yes. But, you know, you've been with Parker Hannifin for 41 years.
Yes.
That's a long time, man. I mean, what do you attribute to your longevity?
So whenever I started with the company, I started as an assembler right on the shop floor. It was actually the summer between my junior and senior year in high school. And I had opportunities to get into a leadership role. And in fact, I was in a leadership role before I even graduated high school. And the opportunities just continued to come. And as the company grew, the opportunities presented themselves. And I just continued to grow up in the company, literally grew up in the company, and had the opportunity to get to work with some amazing people and have some great leadership that mentored me and inspired me along the way.
You know, it's interesting. And I'll tell you what, you know, you're a contemporary, you know, you're close to the same age as I am, I'm going to assume. But, you know, what strikes me there, Dale, is that you started off as an assembler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you grew up through the ranks to the point where you're a group lean director.
Right? Yes.
But when you started with the company as an assembler, you didn't have a degree, did you?
No, I did not.
So, I mean, you know, I guess when I'm, you know, without getting too social political here, you didn't get your actual degree until, you know, into the 2000s, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. Yeah. 2007, 2008 was whenever I graduated from the University of Phoenix with a bachelor's degree in business management.
Now, this is awesome stuff. I mean, this is awesome. You know, you're two thirds of the way through your tenure with Parker Hannifin, and you didn't have a degree, but obviously they recognized in you and invested in you, the talent to move up through the ranks and take a position of leadership. I mean, on the global scale. I mean, not just a plant director. You're a program director on at the global level.
Yes.
I don't want to infer too much out of this, but if you're thinking, if Parker Hannifin's thinking about hiring somebody today to groom them for your role, chances are they're going to look for a degreed person.
Yes, absolutely. And everybody that gets a degree gets it somewhere along the lines. I just happened to get mine later rather than at the beginning. I grew up in a hardworking blue collar family. Nobody had in my family had pursued formal education, just got right into the workforce and got after it. And so that was what I did. But the opportunities came and so when I hit a barrier where I couldn't advance any further, I was committed to making sure I did whatever it took to be able to advance. So going back to school while I'm working full time was what I did, and then that opened up even more doors for me. And then in 2011, I got the job at the group level, which meant moving from Modesto, California to Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that within the Parker Hannifin career track, you hit a ceiling that you couldn't pass without having an advanced degree or post high school degree.
Correct.
Yeah, and I also noticed that in the same time frame, not only were you getting your bachelor's or your in business, but you're also getting your Six Sigma black belt.
So that opportunity came up at the same time, and so
you had a rough couple of years there.
It was a full plate, definitely a full plate.
So if you had to do any of it over again, what would you do differently?
I don't think I would do anything different. The opportunities came. I've always been someone that's looked for what's next, and there's always been a what's next. And so I've had the opportunity just to continue to grow and develop. And, I'll never stop growing. There's always something else.
I really admire your story. I mean, it really serves as an inspiration, or should serve as an inspiration to people that are young in their careers and looking at the big mountain in front of them. You know what I mean? I forget which of the Chinese philosophers it was that said, you can't move the mountain for the mountain. The moving of the mountain, begins with picking up the first stone. And that's really awesome. So how did you gravitate towards lean?
That's a great question. So, I started off as an assembler and got into some different leadership roles. The company was growing, and so as it expanded, I eventually got into the maintenance department, and I worked as a maintenance mechanic. I was always very mechanically inclined in systems thinking. And then in 1993, Parker Hannifin was developing a continuous improvement program that we called Best Practices, or BP, and it was patterned after Honda of America's continuous improvement approach. And I was asked to be a core team member in that first initiative. And I was supposed to go back to the maintenance department, but about halfway through, our general manager pulled me aside and asked me what I thought about it. And I was excited because we were finally brainstorming. We were getting everybody's ideas. We were implementing the team's ideas. And we were making, big impact. But I didn't know if it was flavor of the month, if it was going to stay or go. So I told him I'd go back to maintenance, and he said, "Well, we don't need a maintenance lead anymore. So would that help you make up your mind and keep doing this stuff? That was one of the best things that happened to me because it shocked me out of my comfort zone. And so I thought, well, if he sees a future in it and he sees something in me to lead it, then I'll do it. And so that was really kind of a milestone moment there in 1993. And I just continued to doing continuous improvement projects. Parker made the commitment around 2000 that lean was going to be the continuous improvement approach. And so I just naturally gravitated into the lean champion role and continued to make improvements on a larger scale every time that opportunities came to expand. I expanded beyond the one plant into to four manufacturing plants. And then in 2011 with the group job, with 40 plus manufacturing plants around the world.
But you're, made a continuous improvement manager and a lean manager well before you became certified. So was there internal program to Parker Hannifin that developed your lean skills, your continuous improvement skills?
There was not a clear cut formal structure. There was these initiatives, but there, Parker Hannifin is a decentralized company. And so there's centrally led continuous improvement, but each of the divisions are very autonomous in being able to run their own businesses. And so there really wasn't a formal, and I think 1999 was the first time that I got real formal lean training. Prior to that, I was grabbing books. I was reading Shigeo Shingo. We read The Goal. We were doing a lot of lean stuff before the word lean had even surfaced.
Interesting. So you know, obviously, since you've had some 20 odd years or so of lean experience, you've probably come to form your own opinions of lean. What do you see as some of the challenges faced when people implement lean or continuous improvement program?
Yeah, I would say that everything rises and falls on leadership. So where we have excelled at applying lean thinking and driving continuous improvement, we've had good, strong leadership with clarity of vision and support and resources. Where we failed, it's not because of anything to do with lean. It always comes back to leadership.
Yeah. So I think I was just having a conversation or discussion, if you will, on LinkedIn today about these concepts. And I think the question posed was, why does Scrum fail or why does lean fail? And you talked about leadership and I made the comment that, these concepts don't fail. Mm-hmm. They're inert. You know what I mean? They're just absolutely, they're either going to succeed or fail based on the people involved. And people, of course, includes leadership, includes stewardship, includes followership, maybe even friendship, as well as, of course, creating an environment of mutual respect and understanding and empathy where people have the, a level of comfort where they could express themselves and they can say, I've got a better idea, and they'll be listened to, not just, olayed. But the person argues that, this concept itself can fail. And it's just like, I think about the saying, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Mm-hmm. I could have a weapon on my desk all day long. It's not going to do anything except sit on my desk and take up space.
Yep.
And, what I do with it, once you introduce a person to that weapon or to this concept, that's when it's going to act. That's when it stops becoming inert and it's an active, component of the person that's wielding that tool or concept or, in this case, weapon. So, yes. Now, you talk about leadership being important. Where, you know, what are some of the things that, you know, over the course of your years, have you developed or recognized as quality leadership characteristics, and which leadership characteristics, well, are detrimental to being a leader?
So, you know, I think being collaborative is a key characteristic. You know, getting the engagement of the people in the process. I like to call the people that are in the process experts, because they live it, breathe it, feel it, touch it every day. But there also, you know, needs to be that role of the visionary within the leader that needs to have clarity of where we're going. So beginning with the end in mind, or at least having some sort of compelling vision for where we're going so that everybody can get on board and be aligned.
Right. Right. So just, you know, I know this is sort of a speed round question, but I'm going to bring it forward a little bit. Who are some of the leaders that you might admire or look up to or think of as role models?
Yeah, the best leader one of the best leaders that I've had, his name's Jim Montavon. And Jim was a guy that he and I worked extremely well together. He would paint a clear vision of where we're going, and he would get out of the way and he would support me and we'd get there. So he was, someone that I still respect and am in contact with today. Another leader was a very strong servant leader. In fact, he would never introduce himself as the boss. He would say, I work for everybody else, and extremely supportive, but visionary. And so that's why those two characteristics, I think, stand out for me. Having good clarity of where we're going and then making sure that we're resourced and supported to get there.
You know, you talk about, or we had talked about the necessity of having a compelling vision and clarity. You just brought up clarity. But, you know, a compelling vision, you know, that's, and clarity, those are two things that are often not clearly connected together.
Yeah.
It's not enough to say we're number one. Number one at what, right? Mm-hmm. The clarity, but at the same time, we have to learn how to be concise. How do we explain that vision so the janitor can understand?
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, it can be all about profits and making money, or one of our operations, for example, produces desalinization, reverse osmosis water makers that go on military navy craft, and so they had a poster that said improving the lives for those who serve, right? Because we're purifying the water so that they can have clean, fresh drinking water on a submarine or on a aircraft carrier.
Right. Yeah. You know, and you think about that clarity, you know, just having a mission, having a vision, saying we're going to be this, but you have to explain it then, as you just did, in non-MBA words. You know, everybody's got to be able to understand, and there can't be able, you know, it can't be a we'll call it a motivational speaker moment. Mm-hmm. It's got to be, have some meat on the bones, and people got to walk away saying, ah, I know what I got to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, when you're looking at lean, you know, people think about cutting waste, cutting waste, cutting waste. Mm-hmm. You know, is there a point where you're just cutting too much?
I think if it's all about cutting, then yeah, you can cut too much. If your objective is to lose weight, you can lose 20 pounds immediately by cutting off your leg, right? But that's not clarity of the objective. The objective is to be healthier, and that's why you want to lose weight, right?
Yeah,
so, so striving towards, lean organization is one that is eliminating the waste. But I have a PowerPoint presentation that I've used where I have two photos. I have one of someone who's anorexic next to a triathlete. And so both of them have very little waste on their bodies, but the triathlete is strong, fast, conditioned, agile, is able to execute and perform, whereas the anorexic person is sick and weak and can't perform. So I don't know if that answers your question about cutting too much.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think in this case, what we're talking about is, cutting away the bone, cutting away muscle is probably counterproductive.
Yeah.
Now, losing the weight, getting toned, getting conditioned, and what about the pace of that conditioning? Do you see a threat sometimes to these programs when they try to do too much too fast?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to be realistic. So smart goals, we use smart goals a lot, being specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound, and it has to be attainable. I utilize the Gantt chart quite a bit so that we plot out everything that needs to be done, and we can see then the things that are in that project management tool, the things that we can do in parallel, the things that we have to do in series, to try to develop a realistic timeline for where the end is for implementing some objectives like that.
Yeah, right. So, listen, we're going to take a quick break, Dale, and come back in a few moments. Dale Bailey from Parker Hannifin. Thank you very much, Dale.
Thank you.
This episode of State of Readiness, sponsored by the Readiness Institute, the leading education center for companies who want to create an organization that recognizes time as the enemy of the 21st century company and knows the competitive advantage will go to the company that can see further beyond the horizon, recognize opportunities and threats more quickly, has achieved a superior level of operational excellence, and possesses the organizational capacity and capability to defy and deploy decisive responses faster than the competition and even the marketplace, all the while maintaining control of the narrative, and has become the high-performance organization.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Joseph Paris, and you're listening to State of Readiness. With me, I have Dale Bailey from Parker Hannifin. Dale, we're talking about, leadership, and we're talking about vision. But how do you get people to see beyond the short term? How do you get people to see, long term? Get them to act, in the here and now, of course. You can't just always live in the future, but, how do we keep people aligned to that future vision, and how do we balance the needs of the here and now with that future?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, it's very challenging, but I think, that's where that aspect of perseverance needs to come in as well, and that grit as far as never giving up, because the here and now is, creates sense of urgency, and very often short-term focus. But, that aspect of generating those conversations about where are we going, trying to help others develop that long-term vision of a legacy and thinking about where we want to go in the long term.
So what I'm hearing is the word alignment comes immediately to mind with what you're speaking about. So I'm thinking about the long-term vision, and of course everything that we're doing is in the here and now. I mean, we're not working next week, we're working right today. We showed up to our work today, and we're working today. So I think we have to ask ourselves, is what I'm working on progressing us to where we want to be? Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we start working on busy things just to keep busy. Okay. Yeah. Just have something to do, because nobody's got the inspiration or given us the guidance to give us something that is going to incrementally move us to that future state. So we have to find something to do. So we find, you know, we do something, but eventually, you know, we become out of alignment, completely out of alignment with that, you know, company vision. And we're like an appendix, you know, we get cut out because we're not, you know, useful at all. And I think this is why one of the reasons that the continuous improvement programs stop being continuous, because they stop working on what's important.
We lose sight of the strategy and the vision and the values that we're wanting to develop and create. We get very short-term tactical, but the tactical needs to, as you say, align with that longer term vision. You know, personally, I also have a personal approach to setting some annual goals. And then I revisit those quarterly, monthly, weekly, and even daily to make sure that I'm progressing in the right direction.
So, we talk about leadership and communication quite a bit, but, you know, what are some of the countermeasures that might be available for failure of leadership beyond what you're able to influence?
I think sometimes we sell short the amount of influence that we have. We have a degree of influence in every case, sometimes a lot of influence, sometimes maybe very little influence. But the more that you can build a relationship and a degree of trust with the leadership, then the stronger your influence becomes.
Yeah. So, you know, wouldn't that also lead to, leadership, empowering the people to just do what's necessary? Assuming a couple of things, assuming that the people doing the work understand the vision and, what are some of the leverage points of achieving that vision, shouldn't the leadership be more point them in the right direction, support them, outfit them, and let them go about doing their thing, and just, you know, take a role of support and mentorship and stewardship?
Yeah, absolutely. With Parker Hannifin being a decentralized organization, that's much of what we need to do is provide a clarity from the top. So we have an overriding strategy called the WIN strategy, and that provides some guidance and clarity. Then we have our focus on lean at the corporate level, and then also each of the groups that begin working with all of our teams.
Yeah. So, if I'm thinking about this leadership and promoting people down the line, letting them work their own way but keeping aligned. Have you ever been to New Orleans?
Yes.
Okay. No doubt. Then you've heard a New Orleans a street jazz band, right? It's 8 or 10 people getting together and jamming. You ever hear them or see them?
Yeah.
Okay. So what gets me about these jazz bands, and by the way, they're pretty darn good and they're a lot of fun, right? I mean, it looks like they're having a lot of fun, everyone I've ever seen anyway.
Yeah.
But what gets me about these jazz bands is that they're playing a tune, and then one by one, maybe, little groups, in fact, will sort of go off on their own. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They'll start jamming. They'll start doing their own thing. All right. Not really connected to the band anymore, but playing on their own thing, but sort of tethered still. Mm-hmm. But then they'll all come back together. You know what I mean? And play together. And then they'll separate and they'll just keep on going back and forth. And I think that, sometimes, the best organizations are going to work like a jazz band. They know the tune they have to play. They're allowed to go out and be creative. And then they level set against one another, regroup, and then, take it to the next phase.
Yeah, so they have freedom to to explore within the boundaries of the music that they're playing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, anyway, interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. So I think we're time for the speed round. What do you think? You ready for that?
I'm ready.
All right. So I asked you about your leaders, the leaders that you admired in your, during your career, and you offered a couple of gentlemen's names. But what is the one leader? I mean, the entire, history of the universe. What's the one leader you look up to the most and why?
Yeah, the one leader that I look up to the most and is Jesus the Christ. And, not to get religious or anything, but I see the greatest example of servant leadership, leading with purpose, leading by example, and leaving a enduring legacy. I can't think of anything more that a leader could do. And so, greatest example.
And have you tried to emulate that in any, what's the piece of advice, the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Yeah, so the best piece of advice, I think I got this from my mom, but, it's lines up with the golden rule. And so it's treat others the way you want to be treated. So whenever I'm working with people, I don't care if it's our CEO or if it's the janitor, everybody's on an even playing field, so that respect for people comes from there.
Well, I could assure you, since I'm certain that I've never met your mom. Yeah, I've heard this. I'm sure there's a direct, not dotted line right to the good book, right to the gold.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
So, just a couple more. What's a personal habit that contributes, or habits that contribute to your success?
So, I've always been one that I'm always reflecting and planning. I've done it in different ways throughout the years, but really having working towards clarity of my own personal mission in life. Why am I here? Lines up with some annual plans, quarterly plans, monthly, weekly, and even daily. And then my mornings is the time frame that I think I'm most effective. And so my morning routines, I wake up in the morning and I begin with praying, and then I read some scripture. I do some push-ups and sit-ups every morning. Listen to podcasts and audiobooks on the way to work. Just try to maximize the value that I can feed, get myself motivated and going on every morning. It makes for a productive day.
Awesome. So I didn't spend any time on this during the podcast, so I'm going to ask one more question, even though I promised that was the last one. You have, if I'm not mistaken, we talked about, some sort of 7 year or so runway to your retirement. And you actually didn't call it retirement. What did you call it?
I called it rewirement.
Rewirement. So you've got 7 years or so to rewirement. And in this rewirement, in this transformation, if you will, personal transformation and professional transformation all rolled up into one, you've started up a business, at least you've created the entity and have put it on the shelf, called right. Aspire Coaching and Consulting, right?
Yes.
And, what do you hope to achieve with that, other than, not drive your spouse crazy?
Yeah, so, I call it rewirement because I don't know if I'll ever retire or stop working towards adding value. And that's really what I want to do, is I want to add value to people and help others. People would ask me, hey, what do you do for a living? And I would tell them, oh, I'm the lean director for Parker Hannifin. And most people, lean, well, what's that? So I changed. Kind of created a separate little elevator speech that whenever people ask me what I'm doing, well, I help people make things better. And then they ask, wow, how do you do that? And then I get to tell them about lean. But, Aspire Coaching and Consulting is a business that I started, and my intent, my hope is that I can help people continuously improve and really become more than they ever thought possible, add value to their lives, live abundantly. And whenever I talk about living abundantly, I talk about it in terms of faith, in family, in fitness, financial, and then what I call functional too, which is what people do for their jobs or their careers.
Excellent. Well, Dale, thank you very much for taking the time today to join me on the podcast. It's been really, really a great pleasure listening to your journey and your values and sharing the wisdom with me and my audience. I really appreciate it a great deal.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Joe. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and have the conversation with you. Look forward to someday meeting you face to face.
That would be special. I'd like that. I look forward to that day. All right. You've been listening to another episode of State of Readiness. I've been your host, Joseph Paris, and our guest today was Dale Bailey, Group Lean Director at Parker Hannifin. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you for listening to State of Readiness. You can discover more episodes and learn about the book written by Joseph Paris of the same title at www.state-of-readiness.com. You can learn more about Joseph Paris at www.josephparis.me/card.